Just in and so good. Thousands of summer deals at your Nordstrom Rack store. Save up to 60% on new arrivals from Vince, Rag & Bone, Adidas, Joe's, Marc Jacobs, and more. Great brands, great prices every day at Nordstrom Rack. But hurry for first dibs. Get your summer favorites up to 60% off at Nordstrom Rack today. Great brands, great prices. That's why you rack.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
This is BVK for Ocean City Tourism, OCMD streaming audio. On March 11th, 2024, the title of the spot is STSA Leisure Summer. This is a 30-second composite stereo streaming audio mix.
Get away with friends to the laid-back Maryland coast, where you can catch up while casting off and hang 10 while hanging out, where a day on board is never boring and full throttle is half the fun, where you can sink a putt, raise a glass, and there's always room for one more round. Ocean City, Maryland, somewhere to smile about. Book your trip at OCOcean.com.
Greetings and welcome again to the Believe Knicks podcast. I'm Matthew Miranda, joined again after a long, painful separation by Stacey Patton. Stacey Patton, lovely to have you here again. How are you doing? How have you been?
Doing pretty well. Got plenty of sunshine. Skipped out on a lot of the Northeast winter, so that's been kind of nice.
You've missed absolutely nothing.
I have illegally streamed enough games to catch up on the most important thing. Everyone else is talking about the Banks failing, and I'm more interested in the Knicks. Right. So
you'll probably get farther with the Knicks than you will with the Banks anyway. Good times in Knick land as usual. They won again on Saturday against Denver, 116-110. They're playing the Timberwolves tonight. There are 10 games left in the season. They look pretty secure in the fifth seed. They still have a game left with Cleveland, and if they won that game, they would have the tiebreaker, and they would have a shot at number four. I don't want to jinx anything, but the way this team has looked all year, unless something oddly catastrophic happens, I can't see them dropping below Brooklyn or Miami. So it looks like they're probably secure where they were.
They have a 99% chance of – they have to win two games to clinch – to, like, not play in the play-in. So, yeah, and just six or better.
So – based off of the impressive win yesterday, based off of kind of how they've been playing recently in general, Stacey has a very good list of kind of questions and ideas for today. And I wanted to start with the first one that you asked, because I did a tiny bit of research on this, very rudimentary, I should explain the question first. But before I do that, BetOnline remains your number one source for all your college basketball betting this season. There's not a lot left, so get it while you can. Get analysis of every play, prop, and point at BetOnline, where you'll find the latest odds, bracket contests, team matchups, and game trends. Updated odds for everything from live games right through to the Final Four and the championship game. BetOnline is your college basketball headquarters this season. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to sign up and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Be sure to use our promo code BELIEVE, B-L-E-A-V, to receive your bonus. BetOnline.ag, where the game starts. So I looked up something you asked. Stacey wrote to me, the Knicks have had much better results in close games of late versus earlier in the season. How much of that is actually them playing better versus randomness or regression to expectation? So, not claiming that this is statistically comprehensive, but just out of curiosity, when I read that, I went through the Knicks schedule and I looked at games that ended within 3 points. It's completely arbitrary. Obviously, you can have a game that ends in a 5 or 6 or even 7 point difference. That might have been a tight game all the way down to the last possession. So this isn't comprehensive, but I did see a couple of interesting trends in what I looked at that I think could be an explanation for what you're asking about. The Knicks have played 72 games. If you split their season in half, the first 36 games the Knicks played, they had 7 games that were within 3 points or less, and they were 5-2 in those games. In the last half of the season, the next 36 games, they have again played 7 games decided by 3 points or less, and now they're 6-1 in that span. So over the full season, games decided by 3 points or less, the Knicks are 11-3. Again, I think there's limits to what that means, but what it made me think when I looked at it, because I had no sense in my mind of are they winning, are they not winning, were they winning close games before? I think there's a couple of things that have probably changed over the course of the season that might impact how we're receiving the same information. So one being those first 36 games, the Knicks were 18-18. And in that time, if you go back to when the season started, there was not a lot of goodwill and positivity towards, like, I think a lot of people were either down on Thibodeau or waiting for things to go wrong. And they did. By early December, the Tibbs watch was on as far as being fired. A lot of people were down on Randall. The Knicks hadn't really given their fans anything positive for a while. 2021 ended very negatively. 2022 was a rough year kind of all the way through. Coming into the season, I don't think there was that much positivity. So I think early on when the Knicks were playing and winning these close games, and it was about a fifth of their games were 3 points or less, I think at that time when expectations and confidence were lower, winning a close game might have felt more like, oof, that was an escape. Like, if we had lost that one, we'd be 3 games under, or we'd be, you know, out of the playoffs. Like, it would have represented something negative, which would have been a continuation, I think, of a negative stretch of emotion. I don't think it's a coincidence that the last 36 games, they've gone from 18-18 to 24-12. And now when they win these close games, I think it's exactly the same proportion. It's almost exactly the same record. But I think what's different possibly now is we feel better about the coach. We feel better about Julius Randle. Now when they win these games, these aren't games that, like, well, if the Denver game, if they had lost that game, it has really no bearing on where they're going at all. They'd still be the fifth seed. They'd still probably end up the fifth seed. So when they win these games, it's all just, it's like, oh, cool. Like, we're that much better. I like winning. The more my team wins, the more I feel better about them, the better I feel about them, the more these close wins feel kind of inevitable or kind of like games that they should win. But nothing's changed, I don't think, other than we feel better about the team and we should feel better about the team. This is a dangerous conclusion to draw off of such a surface level examination of numbers, but it's the first thing I came to in consideration of your question.
No, I think that's a great stat to pull. And the first thing it tells me is maybe we're overblowing, to your point, you know, how bad they were. It certainly felt like, you know, they had a 3-17 stretch last year where, you know, there were multiple games. You know, there was like a 28-point lead blown against Brooklyn where, you know, none of Harden, Durant, or Kyrie played. You know, there was a Portland game. There was an Oklahoma City was tank city last year. It was not this year's Thunder. You know, there was a big blown lead in that game. And then this year, the way it started off, there were a lot of games. And what triggered it was because early in the year, Fred Katz wrote an article. And I think it was at a time when a lot of people were criticizing Tibbs. You know, me and Schwinn talked about this when the article was released. I just revisited this with him. But, you know, the part of that article was like, you know, it felt, and this was like, this was at the worst, right? You had that fucking Dallas game, right? You know, where Luka hit the shot. Yes. You had the DeRozan game. You had, and it all just came like within a week. They had several games where they controlled it. They really should have won, it felt like. And they lost.
You know what's interesting about you saying that? Just a really, really quick point. When I was going through all their 3-point games, one thing that struck me was I can remember maybe half of the 3-point or less games that they won.
Yeah.
I remember every single game that they lost.
Yeah, that's the way my dad has put it, is that you always remember when you get the red light that comes right when you just got green and you fucking have to slow after waiting for
absolutely
a while.
Absolutely correct.
Never remember the green lights you get. But so Fred Katz wrote an article, and I'm going to go look at it, January 11th.
Okay.
This was peak. There is actually someone tweeted from earlier. Someone has been, you know, in all the Knicks quote tweets that have been going around to dunk on everybody else, which Knicks fans deserve right now. Can't hate on it. On January 21st, someone tweeted, "Wow, they tried to tell me Jalen Brunson was better than DeJounte Murray."
Nice.
And now everyone is saying, "Well, yeah, they did because it's true." But at the time that, you know, the Knicks were just really struggling to finish games. And Fred Katz wrote an article, and, you know, they had, it was, you know, by that time, by January 11th, the Knicks had blown 7 double digit leads. There'd been 7 times where they were up double digits in a game, but lost.
Mm-hmm.
However, his point was that it's not that uncommon. And I'm understanding now that double-digit leads are not the same thing as a close game. So it's a little bit of a different question than what I asked you. But I do think a lot of those games went down to the wire.
Mm-hmm.
But there were 7 such teams. And there were 14 teams that had blown 6 or more. And every team had turned at least... And then on the contrary, every team had turned at least 3 double-digit leads into losses.
Mm-hmm.
And so the point, I think, was that this was a reality. It wasn't something endemic to the Knicks. And it felt to me at the time like, you know, and that was the question, right? How much of it is, you know, Tibbs, people would say Tibbs is ISO offense. The Knicks aren't prepared. They're not playing good rotations. You know, because it also felt like when they went down double digits, it didn't feel like there were a whole lot of games where they would, where the opposite would happen, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you would think that if it's just this randomness thing where 3-point era, a double-digit lead isn't safe, anything can happen in these close games. You know, there's no, like, rhyme or reason to it. That's fine, but we don't seem to be on the better end of that. So the reason, the thing that triggered is, like, were we this good all along? But, you know, now, like, the coin flip games are just trending our way more.
Mm-hmm.
And I think to your point, we probably underestimated, even at that point, how often they were. I think that there's also something to be said for the fact that the Knicks rotation is different, right? Derrick Rose, Evan Fournier, and Cam Reddish are no longer part of the rotation. We can debate how much individually or together any of those.
That's a third of the rotation right there. That's significant.
That's a significant thing. But I, you know, without ripping any one of those three players, I think it's the real benefit wasn't that Evan Fournier or Cam Reddish or Derrick Rose doesn't play. It's just who's playing instead of them, right? Now those minutes are going to, especially the Rose minutes are going to Manuel Quickley, who has blossomed into, look, as much as I love Quickley, like, I would be fine if they gave it to Malcolm Brogdon. I think both of them are deserving, but he is deserving of the Sixth Man of the Year. Incredible season he's having. Those minutes are going to him. He scaled up now to be everything a lot of people have thought he could be. I'm not even going to talk about Hart yet because he's come later. Grimes got more minutes, right? You know, with Cam Reddish coming out, McBride played more, which McBride a lot of people did. Were like, yep. McBride can't shoot. He can't do anything. You look at his impact stats, you look at the defense he's showing, he has been an impact player. And I honestly actually think the Knicks regret or wish they could get him more minutes somehow. But it's just...
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah,
And I do think that, you know, that there could be a playoff game where he will play, you know, foul trouble or something. I think, like, if they have that kind of situation, he could play that kind of role. But the larger point is, I think that both can be true, right? Like, there was probably going to be some regression that was going to happen. Because last year, if you look at Pythagorean win expectation, the Knicks should have won 42 games last year. Or 43. They won 37. And a lot of... That was the big debate, right? Well, is that because Tibbs sucks at coaching late games? Or is that just, like... Eventually, they're better than the record indicates. Maybe a little bit of both. It seems like Tibbs has found some of those buttons to push, but it also seems like, to your point, maybe it isn't the close games as much, right? Maybe it is the fact that because the rotations are better, like when they're not in a close game, they're blowing teams. Like, when's the last time the Knicks got blown out? Like I'm that saying. Sacramento game where Brunson was hurt, maybe, but that wasn't even really a blowout.
That wasn't, yeah.
And they're a fucking good team, so like no disrespect to the Kings.
Yeah, they're two in the West.
They have not been like, blown out in a, like a couple months.
I'm looking now. If you want to go, they lost by, if they have not lost by more than 10 in about 6 weeks. They lost in Philly by 11. In,
yeah, even that was a game I think they led for three quarters.
And it was. That was actually yeah. close. They lost to the Clippers by 11 a couple weeks ago. That was close going into the fourth. The yeah. last one, even.
That was also without Brunson, too. Yeah.
Yeah. Atlanta beat them by 15 back in January. But yeah, you're going. If you really are looking like when did they last get their ass kicked, it would be the last time that they hosted Dallas, which was at the beginning of December. They lost by 21. That's it.
And didn't Dallas have like a million threes that game, too?
Yeah, they did. Oh my God, they did.
But that so was the point game. Is like,
yeah.
But so I think this kind of like, and your stat, I think, where they've really only improved from 5-2 to 6-1 in those 3-point games. Sure, you can say, you know, well, those aren't all this, but I think, you know, that I think lends itself to like, it's not just randomness shifting their way in close games. It's that there's been a palpable change in this rotation as a result of the changes they've made. And I think the top of the list, Tibbs deserves credit. Look, I came down on him for not making some of these. And I'm not going to say I told you so, because some of them, I would have, like, especially when they were injured, I would have kept Cam Reddish in a little bit longer, you know, when they were going 7-8 guys. He decided to not do that. So he deserves a lot of credit for that. And like I'll say, like, this is the most confident I've been in him since. No, even more than his first season here, because it really seems like he has the finger on his pulse of this team.
He seems to have grown. When his success the first season felt like, oh, this is that Thibodeau guy that I've seen and heard of, and he's doing the things that I've seen and heard him do. The guy this season, and who just talked about this? Michael Malone just had some nice comments about Thibodeau. Like, Thibodeau has shown growth in places that nobody... It's a unique formula, but nobody had this team being fifth in offensive rating really most of the season. And I know they do it differently. They do it differently than a lot of other people would do it. I think it's a little bit of – I think it's regular season noise that won't translate to the playoffs. But it's still – Thibodeau has been flexible. Thibodeau has played lineups together that nobody would have ever expected to see from him. I think you have to say Thibodeau has grown in 3 years that he's been here.
And yeah, and like, I think that's a good point to bring up. They're fifth in offensive rating, but they're not. They have improved as a shooting team, but they're like an average shooting team. They're big.
Yeah, they're not a good shooting team.
Josh Hart, who is not known as a shooter, like, we got to talk about this too. Josh Hart is my new Pablo Prigioni, where like that Mike Woodson, like he's a good shooter and he just pump fakes all the fucking time, and it drives me nuts. Just shoot it, man. You can shoot.
Pablo was
like, it's
crazy,
not even like but like Pablo at least had a little bit of a slow release, and he was a pass first player.
Yes.
Like Josh Hart has like a normal release. He looks like a shooter when he shoots. Just shoot it. It's going to go well. But I think like it's such a money ball approach that's been taken with this team, and like you know the front office and Tibbs are aligned, which by the way is I think something that a lot of people weren't sure of early on, but
yeah,
not early on is as. Into the beginning of the season, right? Are the front office and Tibbs aligned on Cam? Are they aligned on, you know, all of these guys? You know, they're not a great shooting team, but they don't turn the ball over. They rebound really well. So they win the possession battle, right? That is an analytics thing in many ways. You don't turn the ball over. You pound the glass. You get a lot of free throws. And, you know, we'll see how much that holds up in the playoffs to your point, right? Like, the game is officiated differently. Schwinn has made the point that, you know, the Knicks aren't as foul-grifty as other teams. I'm a little bit not 100% on agreeing. Like, Brunson and Quickly foul-grift a little bit. Even Randall. Well, Randall, I wouldn't, like, Randall's little, like, 15-foot jump shot. He does get hit on the arm. Yes,
he does.
But, like, he is trying to draw that foul.
He is.
So like it's a little bit they walk that line. We'll see how well it works in the playoffs. But they've kind of manufactured. They've moneyballed. This is a moneyball team, which is really interesting considering that when Leon Rose was signed, everyone was like, "Well, he wasn't brought here to moneyball. He was brought here to sign Donovan Mitchell or Devin Booker or whoever." Right? So which is kind of not the way they've gone with this front office, with how they've built this team. But yeah, like, I mean, at the center of it all, like, Tibbs is, and like right now, like my criticisms of Tibbs, I really don't have that many. Like, it'll be like, maybe I would have closed with Grimes over Barrett there. Or I would have closed with Barrett over IQ there one day when they're hot. But like, these are like, they have four great options at the two and three positions between Barrett, Grimes, IQ and Hart. Somebody's going to be left out. More and more, it looks like Hart is just not going to sit on the bench. He's just too fucking good. But like, those are nitpicky things, and it's generally worked out for him. So, hello. Yeah, the only criticism you see now is like, well, he could have gone with Grimes over IQ there. He could have gone with, you know, Barrett versus Hart, like, you know. But like, the reality is he has four great options at the two and three positions, and like, Hart is probably going to close 90% of them because he's just shown himself to be
clearly
super reliable.
Clearly.
And like, you can debate his shooting ability. I don't think he's like somebody who compromises your spacing at all. Like, or so far on the Knicks hasn't been. So there's always going to be two guys really left out. And I think the team has bought into it. And I, like, other than that, I think he's generally, like, he staggered Brunson and Randall pretty well, it seems like. You know, when Randall, I think, like, he's done a good, like, how much of this is Tibbs versus Randall and the players can be up to debate. But, like, when Randall doesn't have it going and is forcing it a little bit, you know, he's happy to, like, shifted to, you know, let guys like Quickly or RJ like run the set, which can, by the way, help Randall get a better shot and easier, like it makes his life easier, right? So I think he's got his finger on the pulse of this team in a way that I don't think he's had even the first year. I think the first year was a lot more play tough, and I think he had a good feel for the defense, but the offense was just kind of try hard in a way. This, when you say the team is based on rebounding, it feels like it's try hard, but if you look at the sets and the way that they get their actions, you know, it's not bad. And I think the shots that they get, a lot of the shots they get do help their offensive rebounding, right? You have, like, when your guards are getting to the rim and driving, that's going to open up offensive rebounding opportunities from Kobe's perspective. But, you know, they're taking high quality shots. They're not shooting a high percentage. But it's tough to really have a problem with the process at all of this team right now. There,
yeah, you were saying it's tough to
have an issue with the process of this team at all right now. So
I agree with that. Kind of similar to your question about I was trying to make a segue and it's not there. I'll just make a different segue. A player that we haven't talked about a lot, and you asked about him, RJ Barrett, who has had a nice bounce back, which I feel is like what most of RJ's career has been a series of struggles and nice bounce backs. And you mentioned, is RJ's recent bounce back another piece of evidence showing Knicks fans often overreact? I'm going to say yes to that question. I think it's not unfair to wish that you had seen some things that we haven't seen from RJ over 4 years. I think it's fair to say that a lot of fans would have wished for a more steady progression of improvement. I find RJ, here's the thing with RJ though. RJ still right now is 22 years old. He won't turn 23 until after the season is over. Are you still there? I can't see if you're still there, Stacey.
Yeah, I'm there. I'm here. Can you hear me?
Am I talking to myself?
Yeah, I'm here.
I might be.
Hello?
Hello, I'm back. And I'm going to keep talking about RJ Barrett.
Can you hear me?
So one of the things I think that's been frustrating about Barrett is there's not the typical progression that you expect from a three pick. And I don't think we can underestimate, like, the significance of RJ Barrett when the Knicks landed him, whatever your actual hopes for him were. And I know that was a season that we were all hoping to get Zion instead. And we thought that we were going to get Kevin Durant in the offseason. And after all of that, potential at the wing, you end up with RJ Barrett, who has vacillated back and forth over his very brief career. He shoots, 45% 1 year, and then he shoots 40, and then it's 45, and then it's 40. Other than the year they made the playoffs, his 3-point shooting has been below average his entire career. We all know the RJ like dossier. I think the thing where it's unfair to judge him at this point too much, you have a right to be frustrated. You have a right to think like, I wish they would, trade him for a piece of fist, but like, fine, whatever. He's still very young. And we talked about this, I think, on an episode a while ago. If you track RJ's like time in the league, RJ Barrett was not drafted to the New York Knicks to be a rebounder. He was not drafted to be a point forward. He was not drafted to be a defensive stopper. He was drafted number 3 overall because he can score. Obviously, there were other strengths and qualities to his game that appealed to them, but if you were taking RJ Barrett number 3rd in the draft, you're taking them because of his ability to score. His first year with the Knicks, his rookie year, he gets less shots per game than Julius Randle and Marcus Morris. His second year, he gets fewer shots than Randle and Derrick Rose and is about equal with Emmanuel Quickley, who's a rookie. Last year is the only time in his career that he averaged about as many shots like as Randle did. The two of them were pretty much neck and neck. And then they add Brunson. So now this year he's behind Randle and Brunson. I think that's significant because you're drafting a guy who has been an alpha through high school and 1 year of college. He hasn't had a long basketball life to see himself in different positions and at different stations. He's been alpha, alpha, alpha his whole life. Then he gets drafted to a team that right away is like, okay, you can now be secondary or maybe tertiary or even, I don't know if quaternary is a word, but why don't you try that? Why don't we make you that instead? And I think you have to allow for the fact that, yes, he has struggled. He hasn't struggled, I think, so much at doing what he expected his role to be. He's struggled, I think, adapting to a role and to a reality on the court. He's, in one sense, RJ Barrett has never, ever had the opportunity to show what he can do. When he went to Duke, Zion was not going to be there. That was a late commitment. It was unexpected. Zion gets there. Well, guess what? Now you've got Zion, RJ, Cam, 3, I think, all top 10 prospects. They're all going to play. None of them can really shoot. RJ gets to the NBA. He gets on a team with Julius Randle and Elfrid Payton, and the lanes are not great. The shooting's not great. All I would say for RJ Barrett is that I'm not sure that there has ever been, I don't know how many 3 picks have been given fewer opportunities to excel at what their strengths are than him. It's not all on the team. It's not all on the team. But I think RJ Barrett, as a young guy who gets you 20-6 and has long runs where he looks really good in games, and particularly running with the bench units, has had some really nice flow and some moments. I do think Knicks fans, I mean, I don't think it's just RJ. I think, the way you phrased it was correct. Like, is this another piece of evidence of Knicks fans overreacting? Yeah. I don't know if Knicks fans overreact more than any other fans do, but we've already had Thibodeau fired. We've traded Randle a million times over 2 different seasons. People have been ready to kick RJ out the door since he got here. Yeah, probably we have been unfair with him. Having said that, it seems to me like the spot where the Knicks could make a change and make the biggest step towards taking the next level would be replacing RJ at that spot. So maybe I'm a hypocrite for everything I just said. What do you think?
Yeah, so as someone who was, I said before the season, I did not think both Tibbs and Randle should be back. As someone who is ready to give up on that pairing, obviously it has worked out. Definitely willing to eat crow there. I think for me, it's, I feel like I've never swung that hard in one direction or the other with RJ, because I never, like, when we drafted him, I didn't see a star the way that a lot of people did. I saw a guy that could maybe be a 1- or 2-time All-Star. I think
exactly.
Michael Finley was a guy used as like the, not necessarily the same type of player, but that kind of impact he could have, which I would have been thrilled with, by the way. Like, people say the third
thing is Michael Finley was picked 21st. That's the problem.
Yeah, but he was a if you got Michael Finley, if you were told me, if you told someone that we're going to take this guy at the third pick and you got Michael Finley's career, and like everyone's like, well, look at the average, you know, win shares or whatever. Like if you look at the average per pick, it's like, yeah, those are skewed by a couple of outliers, right? Joel Embiid went third, Michael Jordan went third. But if you take the median isn't that great, right? Like it's like draft picks often don't pan out. And the fact is, like, if RJ turns into like a one or two time All-Star, or even if he never makes an All-Star game, but like becomes Andrew Wiggins made an All-Star team, but you know, it's debatable how deserved that. I'm gonna say like that dude seems like a great guy. Like it's deserved, but like you know, like Andrew Wiggins probably people had higher expectations of his career. Still has become a really nice player, and if RJ Barrett became that, I don't think anyone would have. I wouldn't have a problem with that. But I've kind of always been in that mode. So like when he's performing poorly, I'm like, but that doesn't mean he can't be that. And when he's performing really well, I'm not like this means he's Jimmy Butler, right? I thought like there was like his high like 99% outcome could be something like Jimmy Butler, or you know, I thought the more realistic outcome was Jaylen Brown, but Jaylen Brown has gone to another level, so that's probably not as realistic anymore.
DeMar DeRozan doesn't seem as quite the comp as it used to.
Yeah, exactly. And like, you know, you know, so the things that I was looking for with RJ this season, and that's the thing, a lot of people are like, well, he's still inefficient. He's the same guy he was as a rookie. And even during his slow stretch, why I was hesitant to kind of buy into that is because like the issues were, on the one hand, the main issue of him on offense was and still is, you know, he's improved on this, but the biggest issue is when he drives and doesn't kick the ball out, right? Just making easy reads. He will make his life and everything and his efficiency, everything will be way better if he just kicks out a little bit more often.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean he's a selfish player. That doesn't mean he's incapable of that. It means that he's 22 years old, and he, like most 22-year-old, most people really under the age of 25 or 26 in the NBA, he's still figuring that out, like that balance.
His brain is literally still like forming. Like we have to remember this.
And you know, and to your point, he has had to adapt to a variety of roles. And the other thing was the other big thing as a rookie, the real more worrisome thing as a rookie was this is a guy whose big strength is getting to the rim a lot and he doesn't finish at the rim well. That was the worry when he was young. That has quietly improved, not dramatically. He's not a great finisher still. He is at worst an average finisher. Like you can, it's fair to call him but like with his volume, that's fine. And there have been real improvements, right? The footwork has improved. There is a real mid-range float game. He predetermines it a little bit too much, but there is something there that wasn't there. You know, the shooting isn't falling, but you know, the form is good. The free throws have improved. So you look at all those things and like people are saying earlier this year, he hasn't improved his offensive game at all. It's like, you know, you can look at the numbers and say his efficiency hasn't improved, you know, his assists haven't improved, his points haven't improved. But if you look at his game, the context and how those things are happening has changed, right? Mm-hmm. And that is, and like, that's the same thing I said about Quickly last year, where it's like, people are like, well, look how much his offense has regressed. I was like, his shooting regressed last year, right? Quickly was in a shooting slump last year. But if you looked at the fact that what had, like, that didn't mean that his offensive game hadn't grown. Right? Like he was much better inside the arc. So it's just the question of, do you believe he can get back the things that he was doing before at a high level? And in RJ's case, it was the question of, now that he has added these things, can he put all of these things he's added at different times together? And the only thing that's really remaining right now is continuing the consistency with the reads and just getting back to league average as a three-point shooter, which given his free throw shooting, given that, like, you know, he can get those attempts without, like, he's good relocating off ball. He doesn't really need to be a bull up guy. I think that's fine. And like, if you're fine with RJ being somewhere in the 17 to 20 point range, 5 to 6 rebounds, 3 assists, fringe all-star, third option type. I think the defensive effort has improved a lot. Maybe he'll never be like a lockdown guy, but that was another worrisome thing early in the season. You know, there you have to remove like the legitimate worries, I think, and there were legitimate worries to me and that there were not legitimate worries. So like when people are like just overanalyzing, is just looking at the surface level efficiency and overanalyzing that, to me that was not a legitimate worry unless you like dig deep and say this is the concern. legitimate worry was, can this guy ever really be efficient at his bread and butter, which is getting to the rim? You know, a non-worry to me is he gets tunnel vision too often. I mean, that's not a worry. It's bad for the team in the moment, but he has shown enough that he's capable of that, that I think that growth was fine. But a legitimate worry might be, well, that guy takes a lot of possessions. He has a lot of bad defensive tape. I think what you focus on is very much affected by when they drafted RJ third overall, or when he's played his first half season. Did you expect him to be Jimmy Butler? If that's still your expectation, if you expected him to save the franchise, then you're going to like be disappointed by him more often than not. But if your expectation was the Knicks drafted a really good player who they extended for their second contract, which is a big accomplishment for them, he's becoming like a plus player who can be a high level contributor on a championship team, I think he's shown more than enough growth for me to think that he's on that trajectory, and I'm interested to continue to see that as we get into the playoffs here.
I think something that hurts Barrett a lot, which I think is something that we maybe bring to it more than the players do. Like the other day, the Knicks were playing, maybe it was the Denver game or the one before that, and Randall, who's been, I love Randall, he's been really good for years, mostly. Randall made a move. There are possessions where you can tell, like, Julius Randall is going to bring the ball 94 feet and he is going to put up the shot no matter what. When he's frustrated, there's just times you can tell, like, Randall is going to do this thing. And it's incredibly frustrating. Like, it drives me nuts when he does it. Just because I'm tired of seeing the same mistake. RJ, I think, gets a lot of crap from fans because, for example, I think this is what's unfair to RJ. RJ did this the other day, too. He drove to the rim. He had maybe two guys on him. He tried a tough kind of runner, floater, and it missed. And I'm immediately exasperated. I'm like, Jesus Christ. Like, I'm tired of watching RJ Barrett do this. That's my bias that I bring to it. When I look at RJ Barrett's actual production, like you were saying, his rookie year, on two-pointers, he shot 43%. That's now 49%. From 0 to 3 feet, he was 57. He's now 65. From 3 to 10 feet, he was 27. Now he's 39. From 10 to 16 feet, 28, 33. The only places that he has regressed, and it wasn't the case the last 2 years, are long mid-range shots and three-pointers. And that's just if you look at his first season until now. He was actually pretty good on long-range twos the last 2 years. So I feel like part of what hurts RJ is he is finishing better. He is doing some of these things better. But I know I'll just say for myself, I can't speak for anyone else. I get so tired of watching him. And I think it's hurt more with Brunson this year, honestly, because Brunson has such an amazing, like, immaculate touch. And RJ does not. But to be fair, like if you look at the evidence, he is doing better. You know?
Yeah, and like, I mean, that's, again, it comes back to it, right? Like, do you just want to get RJ to 65% finishing at the rim and a guy who just fucking gets there all the time? Or, like, do you need the tween Hezzy shit? Do you need him to, like, give RJ the ball? Like, prioritize? Like, that's another thing. When the RJ fans, right, the guys who are super high on RJ being a superstar, fall into either, like, oh, he sucks now because he's not putting up 20, like, Anthony Edwards numbers.
Right.
Or on the contrary, they'll be like, well, they need to run the offense through him. Like, Jalen Brunson and Randall are stunting his growth. The answer could just be that, like, I don't know that I don't know that RJ will ever be the guy that you run an offense through. By the way, I don't think the Knicks run their offense through Julius Randle. He scored, like, I think that a lot of people think that's absurd. He's a leading scorer, but he works off of everything else. RJ can be that kind of guy too, and I think he is in many ways. But he's a guy that picks off of everything else and just that's fine for him to be. You know, you just have to, if you keep those things in perspective, then you look for we need to see his footwork improve. That's been a major change. We need to see him Tibbs, honestly, like everything I say, like Tibbs had one of the great responses in press conference of late. I think Chris Persianen asked him this, and if it's not Chris Persianen, you know, a reporter asked him about RJ, and he just said, look, when he gets to the rim, when he puts, you know, when he focuses on that, makes the right reads, the game is really simple, right? If they, you know, if you have a lane, if you take the shot. If they collapse on you, pick it out, right? But, you know, when he does that, he does well. When he starts fading away or floating and all of that, what I think is what a lot of Knicks fans have said, that's when he gets in trouble. And I think when he – that's not independent of, like, the reads, because oftentimes when he's fading away or floating, it's because the rim is cut off, which usually means someone is open. And if he's taking less of those, one, it means he is getting to the rim more, but it also means, and I'm sure Tibbs is aware of this but just didn't outline it, which is that a lot of those times it means now instead of forcing up that shot, he's finding somebody else, right? And we've seen he has the ability to pass. Like, that's never been a question. It's just, you know, the decision-making and all that. So if your expectations and you're looking for the right things, like, he's grown. So I don't think people, you know, I think people aren't are worried. I do want to, I know we're getting a little close on time. I did want to ask you this, and this is something I asked on Twitter today. You know, Josh Hart has been a big addition for the Knicks. And Jalen Brunson and Randall have turned into guys that the Knicks didn't think they had, or Knicks fans didn't think we had at the beginning of this year. Jalen Brunson is a guy you can give the ball to in the fourth quarter at the end of games and say, get me a bucket. He didn't have a great game against Denver. Elite, amazing first quarter. Welcome back, Jalen Brunson. He was pretty shitty for like the next 2.5 quarters. And he still got them a huge bucket late against Aaron Gordon that nobody else on the Knicks gets.
Yep.
Quickly's not, I mean, maybe Quickly. Probably nobody else on the Knicks. And like, I'm not as comfortable saying Quickly would get it as I am with Brunson. They have that guy now. They have a really elite second option who can play off of all of that and score at three levels in Randall. They have a rim protector, like an elite defensive player. They have a really good offensive third option in Barrett. And when he's not playing, Quickly is a great third option for a playoff team. Josh Hart has shown himself to be a great third option and a guy who can plug a bunch of holes. It's built like this kind of team. So my question is, you know, we've talked so long about who is, like, the Knicks still need that star, that star, that star. And I think, like, now we're at a point where the guy who might be available, you know, James Harden is going to be a free agent this summer. And, you know, there's been talks that he might leave for Houston. I don't know why he would do that. But,
strip clubs, that's why. No, there was actually a long article in The Athletic about a week ago. I might have been David Aldridge, I can't remember who wrote it, but someone touched on this specific issue of, like, Harden's connection with Houston. He's apparently the owner, Tillman Fertitta, who's an asshole, like, really has some affinity for Harden. Harden really does, according to the article, has a strong sense of home with Houston, has a lot of, like, charities and work that he's done there. I don't know if all of that really is honestly a mask for the strip clubs are better and that's where he wants to be. And I don't say that judgmentally. If that's what brings him joy, then that brings you joy. But there's a lot of smoke there for a story that otherwise wouldn't seem to have any fire at all.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, this is the best. He's in the perfect situation. He's playing, like, this is not his best season. He's put up, like, 30-point near triple-double seasons. But he's putting 22-11 on a elite title contender, playing next to a great guy and, like, an MVP-level player. But he's, like, Harden is making that engine go. Like, not to take away anything from Joel Embiid, who is, I don't want to get into the MVP debate, but he is as deserving as anyone else in the league. You know, but Harden has been as big a part of their success and a big part of Embiid's success as people won't realize. So I don't know why he would leave, but if he does, Embiid may be available, and that would, so, like, and there's a lot of, you know, Schwinn was saying this, that, like, you know, you wait till 25 and, you know, maybe, you know, this, the team, the way this, the vibes are, you look at the track record of teams that go all in. It ain't great, right? Look at the Nets. You know, like, when you just kill your depth to go in for these 2 or 3-star super teams, you know, it doesn't always work out. So I guess the question I'm asking you is, like, so I think Embiid is the ultimate test, because if you're at the point where you would say, you know, if we have to gut the roster, you know, let's say we keep Quickly and Hart, but we add Embiid, or we have to give up Quickly and, like, we only keep Hart, but we have to give up all the young guys. Yeah. And all the picks. But we get Embiid, we get to pair him with Brunson and Randall, maybe keep, like, Hart or one other role player, and, like, and that's our team. If you're a no to that, to me that means that you said that there is no star that would work. That's what it says. To me that says that I'm, like, Luka wouldn't, like, to me that says that unless we get Giannis, maybe. Mm-hmm. Like, there is no star you would trade for, which is fine. So it brings back. So I don't want to ask if you think that Joel Embiid is the guy. I want the more pertinent thing is, do you think the Knicks can continue to make these kind of Josh Hart types moves and get themselves to a championship? And you know, if that's an I don't know to you, is there anything like in this upcoming playoffs and coming end of the season that might indicate to you that that's about worth taking rather than trying to, you know, push your chips all in?
I've wrangled with this thought for a few months now, really since December when they started winning. At the moment, my answer is kind of both. I don't want to rest on what they have. I think the Knicks have made that mistake recently. For example, and I know nobody wants to hear this, and it may be different, and I know that he had a very good experience a year ago. We haven't seen Jalen Brunson in the playoffs. I know what he did to Dallas. There's a limit to how much I care about what he did against Dallas, because I don't think Dallas, you know, like, oh, sorry, against Utah. For Dallas against Utah. I feel better about Brunson's capacity to excel in the playoffs than I do other Knicks because I've seen that. But I think, like, I have for a while been like, you know what? Like, maybe Josh Hart, you know, he's not a star, but he does more. I think Hart ticks more boxes that they need filled than Barrett does when you're going to play him with Randall and Brunson. So part of me thinks like, no, I don't want to trade for a star because the Knicks are on. When I spoke earlier about like that path of progression that you wanted, that we look for from players, like the Knicks are on that progression. The Knicks are better. They're solid. They are plus in a lot of, as a franchise looking forward, they're a plus in a lot of different things. They have extra draft picks. Their cap situation is good. They don't have any bad contracts. Their coach is working. Their players seem happy. Like, they're on the upswing, which when the Knicks are good, like, they will attract other kinds of players that they don't when they're mediocre or when they're bad. So all of that, I feel like, I think they will need a star. If your goal is, I think this is a separation point for me. If your goal is I want to win a title as soon as possible, period, then yes, I would. Then you have to trade for a star because Jalen Brunson is not going to be the best player on a title winner. And Julius Randle,
no matter how good the supporting cast is, you know,
I don't think so. I mean, let's be fair. We have not seen many 6'1" guards lead teams to titles, no matter how good the cast is.
I mean, if you look sub 6'5", there's one in recent memory, and he's the greatest shooter of all time.
There is. And Brunson has had moments this year where he's maybe reminded me of Steph, but just like Randle 2 years ago, there's a reason why, like, a lot of people can have one magical season. Steph has had like 10. There's a difference between those kinds of people. I got to see more. I love Brunson. But I feel like I am not as a fan in a place where my feeling is they have to win the title as soon as possible. I feel like I want for my team them to get over this hump of being a joke. And I want them to be successful and sustain it because I believe that if a New York City basketball franchise has sustained success and is getting a better reputation for how they treat players, you see with Derrick Rose, you see, like, remember a couple of years ago, I think it was Kentucky or Duke. I think it was Kentucky. We didn't even have their players work out for the Knicks, like, before the draft. Like, I want to see the team establish itself on solid footing, and then you can start to build for this other thing. I have no interest in trading.
It was, I think it was Kentucky. I think
it was.
I think it was. I think they really liked Bam Adebayo, and he went for the Knicks. So
there you go. Like, things have come along very nicely, but the Knicks are not. This isn't like the Jets, where you have a franchise that like is just has had nothing but basically failure since a long ago title, and like that's their white whale. Like, it's win no matter what, win. I don't feel like the Knicks are there. For me, they're not. I don't want to see the Knicks just win a title. Like, and I can give you this difference as a fan. In 1994, the Rangers won the Stanley Cup. That had been the push forever. Like, you would watch a Ranger game before 1994 on Long Island, in Pittsburgh, in Philadelphia, and you would hear the 1940 chant everywhere. And it got to a point where the organization's only fixation was we have to win a Stanley Cup. And they did. And they gave up a lot to get it. They gave up a ton to get Mark Messier. They made a billion trades at the trade deadline in 94 to get all these players to make one big run, and they won. As a Ranger fan, for the next 20 years, no ending to their season ever hurt me because they had won. That's all I cared about. They had won the cup. I didn't care. I don't feel that way about the Knicks, which is odd because they're actually getting close to that territory. The Rangers had gone 54 years without winning. The Knicks have now gone about 50. But I feel like to be successful in the NBA today, in a salary cap league that has the exceptions that it does, where players have the empowerment that they do, I think success sustained is more valuable than what Dallas, I think, tries to do. Dallas very much feels to me like a franchise that is always falling into some kind of luck and then deciding like, hey, let's push all our chips in. Oh, that didn't work. KP sucked. Well, or even before that, like, I need 2 minutes on the Dallas Mavericks here. You win a title. Okay. You win a title. You become the first team ever to win a title and be like, you know what? We're too smart to defend our title. We're going to redo everything to make ourselves even better. We'll trade Tyson Chandler. We'll make all these other moves. We're going to get Dwight Howard. We're going to get Chris Paul. We're going to get Kevin Durant. We're going to get meetings with all these people. None of them come. They ruin the end of Dirk's career. They get nowhere near fucking anything. They fall ass backwards into Luka. Good trade. Good for you. They make the move for KP. That is an immediate move. That's a, let's go, guys. That doesn't work. Now, oh, okay. Let's get Kyrie. I mean, that's the ultimate, like, desperation move. I don't want the Knicks to become that.
Yeah.
And I feel like trading Grimes. And let's talk legit star, okay? Let's talk Embiid. If you want to make a deal for Embiid and the Sixers told you, okay, we want, Randall, Quickly, Grimes, 3 firsts in a swap. I'm not saying you would do it. I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility of what a team might ask for. They may not even want Randall because he's his own, you know, he's highly paid and whatever, but if they wanted that much, you can't say no. That's the price range you're in when you're talking about adding a star that would make this team a title. The only player in the league that I would say today, and I asked you this a few weeks ago, would you trade Randall and Brunson for Luka? Yes, that I will do, because I think literally there you're talking about, this is kind of Larry Bird at 23. I will trade for Larry Bird at 23, and I will put up with whatever it takes because I trust he's that good. Because of Embiid's age and injury history, I can't do it with him. And how many other stars? No, I don't like Giannis. Is kind of a goofball. I'm not. Oh. Let me separate my bias. let me separate the personal for a second. I think Giannis will take longer to build a winner around than Luka, because I think Giannis's skills are more narrow. They're brilliant. But like having Giannis, you still need shooters. You still need someone who can handle the ball. I just feel like Luka's the one player who just, with the way the rules are and the way the game is structured, like it's all laid out there for him to be successful. Whereas I think with other stars, you'd be giving a little to get a little. I don't know. To answer your question, because I am not obsessed with winning a title, my obsession is more, I want the Knicks to be on solid footing. I'm not interested in trading these guys, even though I think you bring this whole team back next year, they could win 50 games. They're not going to win a title. But I would rather see the Knicks do that. Bring everybody back, win 51 games, get to the second round, and now let me see where you go from there. Rather than, hey, we have something that's kind of working, let's blow it all the fuck up to try for a star again. I don't want to do that.
Yeah, no, makes sense. I think, you know, whether you're impatient to see this team win a title or not, I think the vibes are so great from this team, and there's something
so good.
I mean, Portland is, I mean, that's kind of, you know, people, I wonder how much Portland fans lost enjoyment of those Dame and CJ teams. They really shouldn't have. Like, that was a fun era. I mean, you have Damian Lillard. You get to watch him play every day. Like, yeah,
they might be one of the rare markets that like did actually. I don't like, that's not a market to me that seems title obsessed. They seem to me like they would dig
it. It was always in the fucking news, and I was just like, let them have fun, you know? Like, yeah, they might not win a title, but you know, and it's like, yeah, I mean, we can go on a hold, but like some of my favorite teams never, like, I love those D'Antoni Suns, you know? Maybe then you can say, well, they never really had a real shot. The Sonics in the 90s had a real shot. That was one of the first teams like that weren't the Knicks that like I really enjoyed watching.
If Nash doesn't get hip-checked by Ori, that Suns team would have won a title. The Adelman Kings, great team, never won a title. I watched them play all day.
And like those, and those were meaningful. I would say the Sonics in many ways were forerunners of the new age era. Like, I don't know that you have the D'Antoni Suns without the 90s Sonics, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know that guys like Giannis are used to, or maybe that's a bad example, but you know, Shaq and the way that the, not just Shaq himself, he was a kind of game changer of his own, but like the way the Magic kind of deployed spacing a big guard next to Shaq, you know, kind of that pace and space around like you know, the paint, that was advanced for its age too, right? I mean, they didn't just turn Shaq into Hakeem Olajuwon or Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, right? You know, the way they paired him with Penny and guys like Dennis Scott and Nick Anderson, that was pioneering. They never won a title, right? I mean, it's absurd to think. I mean, it is crazy to think that Shaq in his prime with Penny Hardaway didn't win a title, and that says a lot about Michael Jordan and Hakeem Olajuwon. But, you know, like, I think that sometimes that obsession can be bad, and forget about those teams, right? Like, you know, a team like the Raptors, right? Like, the Raptors were LeBron's, you know, fodder for a long time until they weren't. And it did take the star trade for them to get there, but, you know, does that mean all of those years where the Raptors had, you know, those fun runs and that regular season success didn't matter? I wouldn't say no, right? Like, you know, it's not binary.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I think even if you take a look at the Knicks, like, and the Knicks' greatest run as a franchise in the 90s when they had kind of 13 years in a row of relevance with Patrick Ewing, they only came close to a title once. Like, I know they contended a lot of years, but like losing to the Bulls in 6 games in the conference final still leaves you 6 wins from a title. I don't consider that close, even though they were a contender. Like, the only year they came close to winning a title was 1994. I don't have bad memories of the 90s. I didn't live through the 90s thinking I would trade it all for a title. Like, I enjoyed, because every team was different, every year was different, every storyline was different. I think it's been so long that I think it would be appreciated now. There was a lot of angst then. There was a lot of like, oh, come on. But I think even Knicks fans have probably learned over the last quarter century, like, oh, we probably should have enjoyed that more than we did.
Yeah, and I'll tell you one. I mean, and I think one, it definitely does not feel like this Knicks team is close to what it, like, they're still getting, you know, comfortable with each other. There's still a lot of young guys. IQ still has more growth in him. RJ still has more growth. Mitch still has more growth in him, right? You know, that performance against Denver is not something he had, like,
yes,
everyone is going to, like, the alley-oop lit the garden on fire, but it was the closeout before that, you know, where he closed out on Jokic, leapt, but landed on his feet under control and still contested the second shot. And that was after, by the way, he had played perfect drop coverage under Jamal Murray. That's just the like a cumulative possession you just hadn't seen from him consistently. These guys are still growing, and like I want to see how that goes, you know, and see that play out. And I like, what better team than the Knicks to buck the conventional wisdom that you have to trade for an MVP level player, you know? Like, I'll tell you what, a lot of teams have tried that and hadn't worked. It did not work for the Brooklyn Nets. The Brooklyn Nets did everything that everyone said the Knicks were supposed to do, right? They got Kyrie and KD. You know, imagine if the Knicks had gotten Kyrie and KD and Zion, and Zion was missing 50 games a year, and Kyrie was, I mean, imagine if Kyrie like said all this shit that he said, and that was, you know, they would have blamed Dolan for all of that, right? Joe Tsai gets
thought about it many times. Trust me.
and I mean, it is interesting the lack of scrutiny Joe Tsai gets given you know, certain affiliations. But you know, we can leave it at that. But like, Dolan wouldn't have gone scot free on that, and the Knicks wouldn't have, right? So and the same thing goes with Durant. So you know, everything is a hard rule until it gets broken. It was a hard rule that you can't win as a jump shoot. Like, Charles Barkley used to say, Warriors are never going to win a title. They're a jump-shooting team. Until they did, right? You know, the Detroit Pistons won a championship. And, people said things like, Giannis, you can't win a championship with Giannis as your best player because he can't be your go-to guy. You won a championship, right? So everything is true until it isn't. So why not these Knicks to break the team? Because I tell you what, besides them having a guy who is what, you know, the intelligentsia, so to speak, calls a marquee name, they have all the other ingredients right now of a team that is just, that can be play with anybody in the playoffs. So,
yeah, I think they are. I think they're on track to impress.
And beyond that star thing, like, point to me a weakness of this team. You can't. They rebound the ball. They defend. They protect the rim.
They're not great at shooting.
They're not great at shooting, but they like. But they're a great offensive team still.
They are. They are. Again, I wonder. I we'll talk about Cleveland in the next spot. I'm extremely interested specifically because I did a thing about Cleveland a little while ago last week. Like, the Cavs match up in certain areas with the Knicks in such an interesting way. They're both like dominant rebounding teams. Cleveland is a dominant defensive rebounding team. I want to see like what happens when that comes up against the Knicks offensive rebounding. I can't remember now. Tonight will be interesting. Minnesota forces a lot of turnovers. The Knicks don't commit turnovers. I'm interested in that. But I'm very interested in seeing in the playoffs because I feel like 2 years ago, I especially was not interested in hearing anything about like the Knicks 3-point defensive numbers are going to regress and Randall's shot profile is probably not sustainable. I feel like this time, I feel like right now, what they're doing that's good is more likely to survive in the playoffs than what they were doing 2 years ago. I think so. We'll find out. But I'm very, very, very interested, obviously, in seeing how the Knicks will do in the playoffs this season. That is going to be it for this episode. We have a lot still to get into this week, which I'm sure we will. Stacey has a great hypothetical question that we will bring up in the next pod. And also, we'll have the Minnesota game to talk about, and they should be playing Cleveland pretty soon. Sorry, let me just double-check the next schedule very quickly. Obviously, anyone who's listening to this, you know what, you're listening, you can look it up on Google. They're playing Cleveland soon. But we will definitely talk again after the Minnesota game tonight. Before I go, please remember, BetOnline, the show is presented by BetOnline. It is also presented by your hosts, Matthew Miranda, Stacey Patton. Stacey, very nice to see you again. And I look forward to potting with you again later this week. Everybody listening, take care, and we will see you soon.
Justin and so good. Thousands of summer deals at your Nordstrom Rack store. Save up to 60% on new arrivals from Vince, Rag & Bone, Adidas, Joe's, Marc Jacobs, and more. Great brands, great prices every day at Nordstrom Rack. But hurry for first dibs. Get your summer favorites up to 60% off at Nordstrom Rack today. Great brands, great prices. That's why you rack.
Whether you're shopping for grads, getting an early gift for dad, or just looking for a little something new or used for your shelf, you'll find it at HPB. And you'll get almost everything for an extra 20% off during the big sale at Half Price Books this Memorial Day weekend. Saturday, May 25th through Monday, May 27th, save big in-store at your local Half Price Books and at HPB.com. Offer cannot be combined with other coupons. Exclusions apply. To learn more, visit HPB.com.
What kind of fun is waiting for you at Kings Island? The, holy cow, we're way too high and here comes the drop kind of fun. The, make a splash all summer kind of fun. The, I can't believe I ate that whole funnel cake. Let's get another kind of fun. But most importantly, at Kings Island, you'll find, for the fun of it, kind of fun.
Don't wait to start your fun this season. Kings Island is now open weekends.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with Privacy Mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course. Present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again! Now, You're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is. Drawing board or...
Miro. All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's one.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.
The South Dakota Stories, Volume 7. My trip to South Dakota was the best summer ever. Now I don't need to go to Mars. Because I've been to the Badlands. And I caught a bigger walleye than Dad when we went to the Missouri River. Then I rode my bike through these huge rocks called needles. Ooh, I also saw my first herd of bison, even a fuzzy furry baby one. I can't wait to go back and see more. There's so much South Dakota, so little time.